Truth.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Most likely, National Bugle Radio. That's right. On the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is your parking lot of free speech. It is where free thinkers and free speakers come, and maybe they even have a tailgate party. If you know what a tailgate party is, Paul, do you have tailgate parties over in the British Isles?
No, what's a tailgate party? It's probably like a car boot sale or something, like, or equivalent. Because are you talking about the back of a car?
Yeah, I mean, a tailgate is actually the back door of a pickup truck, or, you know, that's called a tailgate. And to tailgate as a verb is to trail another car with very little distance in between.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, we have the same phrase over here. Yeah, I don't know what a tailgate party is, but you can go ahead.
Well, a tailgate party, I guess, like, when there's a football game, an American football game, otherwise known as hand egg, and a lot of people want to go and have a party in the parking lot, right? So they tailgate so other people can't get in between them, right? So they tailgate and they arrive in the parking lot right next to each other and set up a barbecue and they grill in the parking lot before the big game. Something like that. I've seen it done. I've never done it myself, but I've seen it done.
It sounds like a lot of fun, you know? When I see these big barbecues that you guys over there have, it's very appealing, you know. I always say lived in America. You guys don't know how good you have it. I mean, it's probably a bit different maybe in the East Coast and the West Coast. But, you know, you see these big houses, you know, everybody's got swimming pools all the time and these massive big barbecues, you know, the size of where I live. And everything's so big. Yeah, I've been to the States a couple of times. But anyway, that sounds like a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that. You know, some people have big houses, some people have small. But, yeah, So the parking lot of free speech, just fill in the blanks. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. And then also the nationalbugle.com, that is the home of the Co-Certified app. It's totally cool and far out and with it and hip. So go to nationalbugle.com. And, you know, with all the Republic and the National and all this radio broadcasting, it gets very confusing. But you can download that app, the Co-Certified app, and I think it's $3.99. It was $2.99 when I downloaded it. But, you know, there's Uncle Joe Brandon with his inflation. So do it today. Okay, so there's so much stuff going on. Last time we were just talking about all the overload. But the big issue now is all the Ukraine business. So what about it?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, and I'll plug it at the start because it's kind of probably best, my own plug. It's just my Odyssey channel where I put up the majority of my content is, if anybody hasn't got an Odyssey channel, go there because obviously YouTube's just futile for people who put up any real content.
And are you getting a lot of traffic on your Odyssey channel?
I'm getting a bit, you know, it's pretty decent for, you know, what an Odyssey channel is because, you know, it's not like YouTube where everybody can access it. And most people are still really not that familiar with it, particularly if you're, you know, past a certain age. And you know, these things are coming at you thick and thin. You've got Odyssey, you've got Telegram, you've got Rumble, you've got, I mean, then you've got, like, the social media.
Yeah, and you've got, bitch, UTE.
Yeah, I must get that one. That sounds good as well.
Yeah.
But Odyssey, I think, is kind of largely known in terms of, like, you know, a competitor to YouTube has been the most censorship protected, immune. It's got blockchain technology, apparently, so it's much less likely to get censored. So I put my content up there. But, I mean, the flow of traffic's nothing compared to YouTube because simply people aren't used to, you know, they haven't really accumulated it into their lives in the way that YouTube, you know, is so familiar with us now after, what, 10 or 12 years of it being around. But it's easy to sign up, and if you sign up, you can just type in Paul Edward Stevenson, and then you'll get all my content on there on Odyssey. It's Stevenson with a B, and it's the same on Telegram. It's Paul Edward Stevenson on Telegram, and So yeah, at least we have these alternative platforms that, you know, even though they're, you know, small compared to YouTube now, maybe in 10 years, Tim, if they can survive, they will really rival something like what YouTube is, you know, at its peak. I mean, to give you an example, someone like Mark Collett, he had, at one point, Mark reached as many as 100,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Right.
And I think he's got something like maybe 14,000 or 15,000 on Odyssey. I've got a couple of hundred subscribers after having the channel a couple of months, kind of thing. You know, but as I say, I've only really started doing it, so it's not bad for what an Odyssey channel is, you know. But yeah, go there and you know you can support it. Anyway, with all that said, right, we're going to try and give a bit of a background to this whole Ukraine Russia situation. Many of our keen listeners will have probably been, you know, listening to a lot of this type of stuff, but I thought it would be good to maybe try and structure it a little bit as to how we got here with this Ukraine situation, where we're at currently and where it might end up. And the sad thing is that the media coverage in the West, save very few exceptions, maybe Tucker Carlson in the United States would be the only exception a little bit, and you know, and even Tucker wouldn't be, you know, 100% in the way I would look at it, but he's definitely the best. Over here, we've no one. Everyone's just terrified. They're all toeing the line, just like the. I think this is how it works here, Patrick. Right? All the alternative media over here, in terms of guys who are criticizing Sky News. When I say Sky News and BBC, that is the equivalent of CNN, CNBC, ABC. Okay, you're going to get pure leftist propaganda, anti-white, anti-Christian, et cetera, pro-military industrial complex incessantly. Unless they've got some guy on, you know, who's a Muslim apologist about the deaths in the Middle East or something, or how they should come here as migrants. Okay, they'll sort of try and, you know, walk that thin line. But we also have a couple of main sort of breakaway channels, which I like to call mainstream media light. And these channels are centrist right channels. And they would have a kind of a, I don't know, most of their hosts would sort of be in their 50s, I would say, 50s and 60s. And their worldviews are very much, in my view, very naive. That the West is always benevolent in its endeavors, and, you know, politicians and our governments are always well-meaning and only ever make mistakes. So year after year, when everything goes really badly wrong, it's always incompetence. There's never any corruption involved because they don't believe in conspiracy theorists. So these guys, you've seen them, you've seen their childlike, and that's an insult to a child to my mind, because my son knew more about how the world worked when he was 8 than some of these people do, such is their entrenchment in their worldview. But you've seen these people over the period of the COVID thing almost unraveling, you know, on a daily basis on your TV as they sort of dissected the data with vaccines and hospitalizations and how the government was clearly manipulating data. But at the start, they fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And it took about 6 months for those types of channels, and then similar kind of centrist right YouTube channels, some of those kind of guys, to then start questioning it. And really, the leader of this group and the leader of this kind of center right kind of movement over here is unofficially Nigel Farage. Because what will happen? As soon as Nigel Farage starts saying something, then all of a sudden they'll come out and they'll raise their head above the parapet and they'll start talking about the, you know, the problems with, and the corruption, you know, with something like COVID. But they are right back to the start when it comes to this thing. They may as well be Sky News. Nigel Farage is cocking out. You know, he's changing the subject. He's covering stuff which is...
Well, what's Nigel Farage talking about?
Completely irrelevant stuff, quite frankly, which is a sign that he doesn't want to get into it. He doesn't want to probably say what he really thinks. So he'll come out with things like, I don't know, just like really silly stuff about, not even about the Ukraine. I looked at his channel earlier and I'm thinking, what are you covering that for? I mean, it's completely irrelevant, nothing to do with Ukraine and not even that important. The most relevant thing I've seen him talking about is this wouldn't have happened without Trump. And they're turning that line out as well. Oh, we need to
take
a hard line.
Wouldn't have happened without Trump or with Trump?
Oh, no, none of this would have happened with, you know, Putin wouldn't get out of his box because Vladimir Putin would have been terrified, you see, of the golf player. I like to call him the golf player, Donald Trump. And so Vladimir Putin, obviously, it goes without saying that Vladimir Putin goes to bed every night terrified that, that Donald Trump might be reelected. And so these guys seem to think that Donald Trump, you know, is a very frightening figure for Vladimir Putin. And there's no way any of this would have happened. They don't go into much detail. The only way it wouldn't have happened is if Trump would have actually shown the man and the Russian Federation some respect, instead of giving him the middle finger at every turn. But apart from that, if Trump took the same line as the current administration, then the same thing was going to happen. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the problems is that on the one hand, you'll have whoever's in charge, certainly right now who's in charge, it's the fake Brandon administration, which means as far as foreign policy goes, as far as Ukraine goes, it's Victoria Nuland. Tony Blinken, to an extent. But Victoria Nuland, she's got a background. She speaks Russian. Ukrainian and Russian are pretty similar. Maybe Ukrainian as well. I don't know. And so they'll do something perfectly horrible. And then to the extent that you get, you know, Republicans or others opposing it, it's always opposing it for the wrong reasons. And, you know, so the types of things that you're hearing now is that, you know, Brandon is too soft, right? That we should have a no-fly zone, or, you know, we should be flying sorties into Ukraine, or, you know, we've got to admit Ukraine to NATO immediately. We have to do it yesterday. So you get these people, you know, Lindsey Graham, a lot of other people, a lot of the Republicans in Senate who are trying to out war hawk Victoria Nuland, even, right? Which is retarded. Then you've got Tucker Carlson, who you mentioned, who does not want to have a war. But his whole narrative is that, what Putin did is horrible. Yeah, maybe he's crazy. He seems evil, but it's just not worth it. Which is an argument. It is an argument. Is it the best argument? Is it the most accurate argument? It's certainly not very accurate. And who's it convincing to? It might be convincing to some people, but to other people, like, you know, you're a tough guy. No, if it's not convincing at all. If, you know, Putin's a madman and if we don't fight him now, we're going to have to fight him later and he's going to be that much stronger. We don't fight him there, we're going to have to fight him here, right? That type of argument will prevail. Fortunately, the one thing I will say for Tucker is that he has had on people. He like on his show, he hasn't had anybody explicitly saying that what Putin has done is justified. But he has had on people from Tulsi Gabbard to this Colonel Douglas McGregor, who have said that for years and years and years, the United States has been provoking Russia through the extension, you know, the offer of membership in NATO to Ukraine and to Georgia, and through, you know, all of this expansion of NATO that's been going on for the past 25 years. And so it was entirely predictable and, you know, just an absolutely predictable outcome of the American policy. So not exactly saying that Putin's is justified, but at least saying that this was very much provoked, and also saying that the way out of the crisis is to make it clear that Ukraine should be neutral. It won't be part of NATO. So at least he has those voices on. Like I say, I just want to reiterate, his own narrative is I don't like it. It kind of angers me, but it's just that there's nobody else with that kind of mainstream.
He's the cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper. I mean, I actually listened to him last night, and there was very little I didn't agree with him, except the in brackets part. He seems evil, and this was following
right.
This was following, you know, laying out that the Putin was very logical. You can't say someone is both logical in their actions and then put in brackets he seems evil just to cover yourself, because you've got like a sort of an almost reaction to not wanting to support him in case you get mobbed when you leave the Fox building or whatever. So I guess it's understandable. If I was in that spotlight, I mean, I actually watched him last night, and, you know, if you had the profile he had, he must have some good security, because, you know, fair play to him in one extent, because what he actually said, you know, was really going against the grain. He's got more courage than Farage over here, because, as I say, Farage is trying to avoid it. he's talking about completely inane things which are completely irrelevant to it, and now and again we'll throw in that. In fact, what he's doing, he's out in Poland at the minute covering the refugee crisis. But you mentioned Doug McGregor. I'm gonna play this clip because I thought this was fascinating and I enjoyed it very much. Hopefully you can pick this up here.
Who joins us now, sir? What's the strategy? Putin attacks a nuclear power plant. What's the strategy behind that? Is it just to intimidate civilians?
The strategy was not to attack any power plants or the power grid. The Russians have very carefully avoided interrupting any power. No damage to communications, no damage to any of the things that are essential, like the water supply. What you're seeing is that the Russians have now driven what is left of the Ukrainian forces, who are taking refuge in population centers, cities, because they have no mobility, no air defense, no air cover, no logistical infrastructure. They are now mingling with the population, much as we've seen in the Middle East. Whenever we drove the Islamists out of business, they ran into cities, used people as shields, the civilian population, and tried to avoid being annihilated. And I think that's essentially what's happening today with the population being used by the Ukrainian forces to avoid destruction.
Do you think Putin will pull what I would call a Grozny? Grozny was the capital of the breakaway republic. He flattened it when the civilians resisted.
Yes.
You're going to see this. I mean, is he going to flatten Ukraine?
No, absolutely not. In fact, he's worked hard to capture most of it intact. Surprisingly little damage, frankly, Stuart, much less damage than we inflicted on Iraq when we went into it either in 91 and again in 2003. Now, I think they're just surrounding the Ukrainian forces, and they are annihilating them. And this is inevitable. And Mr. Zelensky, I think, is postponing the inevitable in the hopes that we are going to rescue him, and we are not coming. President Biden has made that very clear.
You think the end is in sight?
Well, the end of this phase is still a few days away. The first 5 days, Russian forces, I think, frankly, were too gentle. They've now corrected that. So I would say another 10 days, this should be completely over. But the question is, what is it that Zelensky is going to do? The Russians have made it very clear what they want is a neutral Ukraine. This could have ended days ago if he accepted that. And then they can adjust the borders. But the eastern part of Ukraine is firmly in Russian hands. But again, the Russians are not seizing territory. They're destroying Ukrainian forces. That's their focus.
Colonel, it sounds like you don't approve of Zelensky's stand.
Oh, I think Zelensky is a puppet. And he is putting huge numbers of his own population at unnecessary risk. And quite frankly, most of what comes out of Ukraine is debunked as lies within 24 to 48 hours. The notions of taking and retaking airfields, all of this is nonsense. It hasn't happened.
He's not a hero? I mean, he's standing up for himself and his own people? You don't think he's a hero?
No, I do not. I don't see anything heroic about the man. And I think the most heroic thing that he can do right now is to come to terms with reality. Neutralize Ukraine. This is not a bad thing. A neutral Ukraine would be good for us as well as for Russia. It would create the buffer that, frankly, both sides want. But he's, I think, being told to hang on and try to drag this out, which is tragic for the people that have to live through this.
I'm inclined to disagree with you, Colonel, but, we see how this works out. Colonel Douglas McGregor, tough guy.
What he was referring to about neutrality is basically what Russia has always wanted. So let's go back to the causes of this. What Putin has been consistent from the start is that he does not like the idea of this of the Ukraine becoming closer to the West, and this idea of, you know, the United States and its allies sort of peeling the Ukraine away from the Russian sort of sphere and been incorporated into the West, particularly with the EU and, more importantly, NATO. So the EU, as you know, is largely an economic bloc, you know, mainly in simple terms. And then NATO, of course, is the muscle in the equation. And that's what his biggest concern is. And so then you had, as you know, you had right from the start, you've had this request and this legitimate concern of Putin being expressed time and time again. And in response to this, the West has just ignored him, and NATO has just expanded increasingly eastward, with all the ex-communist countries becoming members of NATO. you know, Bulgaria, Romania, Poland, Latvia. You know, I think, many did we say the last time we spoke? I think there was up to 14 countries came in.
Well, in the merry month of May, now from me home I started, left the girls and two were nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
I think many did we say the last time we spoke? I think there was up to 14 countries came into NATO, you know, right from the start, or, you know, beginning in from the early 2000s, I think.
In the 1990s, the first three, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Poland, were they 1997? I think it was about okay. Plus or minus a year. Yeah. And then the next tranche was like Romania, Bulgaria, I think Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Slovakia, something like that, and Slovenia. And then that's most of the old Warsaw Pact countries, and then they've been picking up ex-Yugoslav territories. And so during the Trump administration, you had Montenegro, and then in 2020, what's called now North Macedonia. Macedonia was one of the Yugoslav republics. So you've had this five tranches of expansion. I guess it was Croatia somewhere, maybe Croatia, and somewhere else was also in the third round or something. So you've had these rounds of expansion. Just getting back to Trump, because, you know, there's a whole thing. Well, this wouldn't have happened if Trump had been president. Well, you know, which Trump? And for what reason? Because the thing is, if the 2015-2016 Trump who was running for president, if he was president. If that guy back then was president, remember, Trump said he wanted to make friends. He wanted to have good relations with Russia. Wanted to, he thought he could get along with Putin. And he was questioning the value of NATO. Why do we need NATO? That Trump, yeah, there wouldn't have been an expansion of NATO to Ukraine because he was trying to get along. He would have taken Russia's legitimate security concerns into consideration, and we might not have even had a NATO if he had really gotten his way. Now the president that actually was in charge, who was being Russiagated the whole time. What was it? You know, the Russia hoax. He was being Russia hoaxed. And unfortunately, he was just manipulated into being tougher. I've been tougher on Russia than anybody. Nobody's been tougher on Russia than Donald Trump. Well, that's not what he was selected for. But I don't know if that's strictly speaking true, but there's certain things that he did that his predecessors didn't do. Obama, in spite of the pressure being put on him by, you know, Victoria Nuland and presumably Joe Biden and others and people in the Senate like McCain and Lindsey Graham, he never sent offensive weapons to Ukraine. Donald Trump did. Why? Because he was trying to get the Russia hoaxers off his back to prove that he wasn't Putin's puppet. You know, I was looking at the history of Gorbachev had fully 9 meetings in six and a half years that he was president of leader of the Soviet Union. He had 9 summit meetings with Reagan and then Bush, you know, more than one every year, almost 2 per year. Trump had 1. And in the wake of that 1 actual summit meeting, you know, occasionally they shook hands or had a photo op at a UN General Assembly meeting or something. But they only had 1 summit meeting because the foreign policy establishment was desperate to keep Trump away from Putin. And it went very, very well. They had that joint press conference afterwards. And yet he was called a traitor for that. And people were calling for his impeachment for that. Yeah. And of course, his first impeachment was something more or less related to it.
Yeah.
So that Trump, the Trump that was manipulated into expanding NATO and sending Ukraine offensive weapons, would this have happened under Trump? Yeah. Under that Trump, it would have happened. I don't know if he would have gone quite as far as Brandon and Victoria Nuland over the past year. I don't know if he would have gone that far. But, you know, he was manipulated and played. So there you go.
Yeah. That's exactly right. He didn't have the courage of his conviction in the end. And he allowed himself to be manipulated by, I'll show you. Let's see, let's prove to everybody that I'm not a puppet and a Kremlin agent. It's just like, we don't need you to prove that, Donald. This is dancing to their tune. Just stay the course, you know, and do your thing. But anyway, that's all history now. So then what happened was in 2008, at the NATO summit in Bucharest in 2008, it finished up by saying, and I quote this, NATO welcomes Ukraine and Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations for membership in NATO. We agree today that these countries will become members of NATO. Putin, in response to this, and again I quote, said that this is a direct threat to Russia. And it ultimately, actually, in August of 2008, resulted in Russia declaring war, had a war with Georgia, in which Georgia got a very bad beating and put in their place, because Georgia got very uppity, thinking that they had the backing of the West. And this is actually the situation that Ukraine is in now. But before I go any further, just I thought a really interesting quote I came across the other day with Putin as well, with Obama in 2013, where he said to, let me see if I can find it. He said, "My working and personal relationship with President Obama is marked by growing trust. I appreciate this. I would rather disagree, though, with the case he made on American exceptionalism, stating that the United States policy is, quote, what makes America different. It's what makes us exceptional." That was the quote of Obama. He was quoting, "It is extremely dangerous to encourage people to see themselves as exceptional, whatever the motivation. There are big countries and small countries, rich and poor, those with long democratic traditions and those still finding their way to democracy. Their policies differ too. We are all different, but when we ask for the Lord's blessings, we must not forget that God created us equal." So in one sense, he was glad that this was his.
Like a man, I'm beginning at teen, 15 score or more, and I did lily green, and I know I'm from the leafy from the basement to the zoo, and I know. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. I got the glow. I got the sky. The world is my home.
We ask for the Lord's blessing. We must not forget that God created us equal. So, in one sense, he was saying he was glad that this was in September 13. It was an op-ed piece by Putin himself that was appeared in the New York Times in September 2013. Where, you know, he was saying there was growing trust with him and Obama, and that he appreciated that. But then there was rebuke there as to the sort of the mindset of the American exceptionalism, as well as letting us know he was, you know, a God-fearing man at the end. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, is because less than a year later, or it was about a year later, it was in 2014, in February 2014, you had the coup in the Ukraine, which it completely broke any trust that may have been developed with Obama.
Yeah, the coup of 2/22/14, February 22nd, 2014. I don't want to get too repetitive because I've talked about this a lot, but you had in 2013, Ukraine was in bad fiscal and economic situation. You know, one thing is when the Soviet Union broke up, because of these Jewish privatization schemes, you wound up with all the wealth of these successor countries, Russia, Ukraine, and the other former Soviet republics. So much of it just fell into the hands of these Jewish oligarchs who were able to take advantage of these privatization schemes because you know, the local currencies had lost all their value. Nobody had any savings. And like in Russia and Ukraine had something similar. You had these voucher schemes where the people were issued vouchers and only citizens could use these vouchers to buy shares in companies. But with the post-Soviet economies in free fall and people literally starving and freezing, and nobody knew what a voucher was. Nobody knew what the stock exchanges were. These people were, they sold their vouchers to, anybody who had some hard currency. And who had some hard currency that could actually buy things with? It was Jews who were citizens of Ukraine or citizens of Russia and were in contact with overseas Jewish bankers and whatnot, which was all facilitated by, you know, the people like Lawrence Summers, who was the advisor on privatization sent over by the U.S. Treasury Department. He later became U.S. Treasury Secretary and then President of Harvard, and then he was an economic advisor to Obama after that. So you had that, but Putin had come in and not 100%, but largely cleaned up the financial situation in Russia. He had put the oligarchs in their place, some of them in jail, some of them in exile, but then the others just kind of staying out of politics and getting to keep their fiefdoms. But he put them to a large extent in their place and then used Russia's natural resources in order to pay off Russia's, you know, its trade debt. It's so it pay off its foreign debt. They had no, it had got its trade in surplus. It's got its budget in surplus. It was in strong fiscal and financial position in 2013. Ukraine never had a Putin who took on the oligarchs, and it was just mired in corruption and poor economic management, and it was in desperate need of financing. And the long and short of it is that the EU offered a really bad deal with bunch of austerity, and also an part and parcel of it was decoupling the Ukrainian economy from the Russian economy. Putin offered a much better deal, $15 billion, and then a trade deal that would allow not just the continuation of trade with Russia, but allow them to trade with Europe as well. And Yanukovych chose. And then he was overthrown as a result of that. So that's what brought it on. And then, of course, the moment he's overthrown, the very next day, the new revolutionary government comes in and forbids or decertifies Russian as an official language and takes all of these anti-Russian, anti-ethnic Russian policies. And which, of course, that's what prompted Crimea and Lugansk and Donetsk, which are all like 90% Russian, to secede. And that's what provoked this whole crisis.
You know, Yanukovych was overthrown because Putin gave him a better deal, and he decided to renege on what was going to be happening with joining the EU. And of course, there was all sorts of problems, and it kind of got out of hand. There was a bit of an uprising. It was probably your typical sort of George Soros funded type uprising. But anyway, some people started dying and stuff in protest, and Yanukovych ended up fleeing for his life. So then you had this coup that came in with Victoria Nuland and everything else and put this puppet Zelensky in there. So let's just keep it that simple. And then the problem, you know, at this point, this all could be encapsulated in. This is a big stick that's just poked that bear very hard in the eye at this point. After everything that we've outlined and what Putin's concerns are up to this point. So now you have this pro-Western, puppet in, anti-Russian, pro-Western puppet in there, in the Ukraine. And of course, you had the whole Donbass situation escalate from there as well. And then this, you know, the Donbass regions. And then you had under Zelensky's rule, you had for 8 years up until very recently when Putin stepped in, you've had the Ukrainian government funded by the West, committing a genocide.
8 years
in the Donbass.
Of Poroshenko Poroshenko followed by Zelensky.
Yeah.
Just to be clear. Both under basically, American protectorate. They were kind of American puppets, Jewish puppets, really.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what caused all this chaos. So now you've got a situation in Russia, which is very, very bad. And then I think it was as recent as 2019, you had more talk about the Ukraine joining NATO and this type of thing. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And the more
It's repeated talk from all, you know, it can be from NATO conferences. It can be from, you know, U.S. senators like John McCain. It can be from the Ukrainian officials themselves. But there's been all this talk about NATO membership for Ukraine, which, you know, when you think about it, when you think about it, United States has a policy, the Monroe Doctrine, which it's had for 200 years, of not allowing any foreign military into the Western Hemisphere. And, you know, it's used that as basis for invading, well, I mean, for the Russian, this Cuban Missile Crisis, for invading Grenada, all sorts of things. And so Russia, like, Ukraine is like, it borders on Russia. It's right there. It's as if, you know, and until very recently, they were the same country. I don't know if there's any point in going back to Georgia real quick, but
if you want, as long as we don't, if we can try and squeeze it all in,
I'll keep it real short. Georgia's in the Caucasus Mountains, and the thing about the Caucasus Mountains is it is just chock full of all these different nationalities that are very different from each other. You know, it's just one part of the world where you've got people who have been there for a long, long time. Not all of them, but an awful lot of them. And, you know, there's a lot of different valleys and mountains, and it's all chopped up. And so you have, you know, Georgia, which is the biggest country now in the Caucasus Mountains. And so within the territory that was part of the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic, you had some minorities who weren't related to Georgians. Georgians, by the way, the Georgian language, it's not Indo-European, and it's not Turkic. It's rather isolated. But then you have these, within Georgia, you have these two regions, one called Abkhazia and the other called South Ossetia, which are ethnic groups who have a very different language. Both of them are Muslim, whereas the Georgians are Christians. And when the Soviet Union was breaking up and Georgia was declaring independence, these two regions, which during the Soviet years were autonomous, either an autonomous republic or an autonomous province within Georgia, they wanted no part of being an independent part of independent Georgia. And so following the breakup of the Soviet Union, they became like de facto protectorates of Russia. And from the day that the Soviet Union broke up until today, they have been. And what had happened in 2008 is, emboldened by John McCain, emboldened by that NATO, seeming NATO invitation from a couple months earlier, Mikhail Saakashvili, who was the president of Georgia at the time, he was a John McCain protege, he decided to invade these two areas that were technically part of Georgia but had never been ruled by Georgia. And that's where he got spanked, because Putin, you know, these areas were de facto Russian protectorates and still are. If you look at a map, they're within Georgia, but the post-Soviet Georgia Republic has never ruled them. So I just wanted to – I thought that was worth people knowing about. That's what happened in 2008.
Yeah. So and then we've got up to speed with what happened in 2014, and that was just a horror show, really, from Putin's point of view. You know, they voted to repeal the minority languages there and stuff, and they started, you know, seizing checkpoints in the Crimea and all that. And then, of course, it led to the Crimea voting in a referendum to become part of Russia, et cetera. So we had all that. Okay, and then that brings us up to, let's just get up to where we're at now then. So this has all gone, you know, it's led to the invasion. Putin was ignored. His appeals have been ignored. He's been insulted at, you know, at every turn, really. And he's, you know, adding to that, the bloodshed in the Donbass, which is, you know, funded by the West and armed by the West, by a mixture of Ukrainian soldiers and these other, well, they call themselves neo-Nazis anyway, but they are, to my mind, they are another kind of proxy group, a bit like the, you know, the so-called moderate rebels in Syria, where, you know, they're a mixture, as I understand it, are probably a mixture of mercenaries and brainwashed kids with a very distorted view of National Socialism, and they're very extreme and they're very violent and they're very well armed by the West, and they are pawns in all of this, being used as a proxy. And sadly, I've seen some of their writings, and they're deluded. They are typical of the type of proxy group that the West will use. They're big enough, and they're significant enough, and they're vicious enough where they can use them, but they're never going to be a significant threat to them, you know. So their ideas about, you know, these guys think they're going to, like, you know, spark the Fourth Reich and take over the world, and the jihadis thought they were going to take over the world. But as I say, they're kind of used because they're vicious enough and they're very, very zealous and extreme, genuinely so. But they're not a threat to the establishment and to the West. But as I say, they're useful enough. And sadly, they're all going to die. Because where we're at the minute is Putin has been very, very patient up to this point. And despite what the media is saying over here, that there's all these losses and all these stories of heroism on the Ukraine side, you can't believe a word that comes out of Western media. Most of it, probably all of it, I would say, and certainly 95% of it is just BS. The only reason that Russia hasn't gotten this done so far is because this group is using Ukrainian soldiers or Ukrainian citizens as human shields.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen, if it's not already happening, I get the feeling it is already happening today by a few things that I've seen. It's only going to take for Russia to say, okay, if we have to do it the big time way and get the big guns out, then I'm sorry, but we are going to get it done here. And if you're going to be using some human shields, it's ultimately going to be, collateral damage here, horrible as that is. But the thing is, it's only going to take probably, and I don't mean to dismiss it, because that's a horrible situation to be in, but they are using people as human shields. It's only going to take probably for the Russians to target a couple of those areas and kill everybody in that region for this group to realize that it's not going to work anymore, that the Russians are going to bomb them. And then they're going to realize that they're not going to be, the human shields aren't going to work, and they're going to flee. The word's going to spread very quickly that it's not going to work, and they're going to get out of there, and the Russians are probably going to catch them as they flee Kiev or wherever. And then they're going to get it done. But one way or another, they're going to get it done. And it's a sad thing, because I think a lot of those guys in that group, they're young kids. I've seen pictures of them. Some of them don't look any more than about 18 or 19. Mm. And they are going to die, and they are being used as proxies. And this whole thing has just been prolonged. They've been encouraging Zelensky, who's probably not even there. And this whole frenzy that's going on over here and this sort of, heroism narrative that Douglas, what's his name? Colonel Douglas,
McGregor.
What's his surname again?
McGregor.
McGregor spoke about. That's all he's doing. He's prolonging the suffering, and he's going to increase the death, because the reality is, if you are facing a much, superior force, if you do care anything about the people around you and involved in this, you are going to surrender and try and, come out of it not in a body bag.
I'll tell you what I think is going on, but go ahead and finish your point.
Well, I was going to say, and then it could have been avoided ages ago, and we've been stirring it on and cheering it on for their heroism. It's not heroism, it's just stupidity. And it's actually horrible, because it just doesn't need to happen. And then there's been these attempts by the Russian side to basically say, just meet our demands, and this is all over. And and today, the Dmitry Peskov, or is it Dmitry, is how they probably pronounce it. He's a Kremlin spokesman. He said today, the offensive attacks will stop, quote, in a moment, if Kiev meets their demands. And what's their demands? Well, number one, make amendments to the constitution according to which Ukraine would reject any aims to enter any bloc, namely the EU and NATO. Neutrality. Right. Recognize the Crimea as Russian territory, and recognize that the Donetsk and Lugansk areas are independent states. Now, that is new from what he's always been saying, because Putin has only recognized those himself. But apart from that, this is the same thing he's been saying. This should not be a surprise to anybody.
For 8 years.
Our Western media says he's trying to expand the Russian empire.
this is what I think the game is from the Zionist point of view, from Victoria Nuland. Zelensky, there might be certain differences in the way they're thinking about it, but from Victoria Nuland's point of view, what it is, they're trying to regime change Putin. The whole objective of this is to get remove Putin from office, not necessarily immediately, but and the way they do this is by maximizing casualties on both sides. On both sides, keep the war going as long as possible. And that's why, and also maximizing casualties, this will inflame public opinion all over the world. It'll inflame, it'll create support for crippling economic sanctions. And then the sanctions hopefully will cause a lot of pain. And that, coupled with outrage from Russian citizens at having lost loved ones who were either in the Russian military or their, you know, their cousins and in-laws in Ukraine, to make Putin vulnerable, and so he can be overthrown by a color revolution or whatever. That's, I think that's the objective. And so for Putin, he's got to balance this. And, you know, how many, because I think he understands this, and how many of his own troops is he willing to lose to minimize Ukrainian civilian casualties? Because he loses both ways. For every Ukrainian civilian who loses, who dies, he loses because of inflaming, you know, foreign opinion against him. But, of course, you know, both ways he loses. So that's what the name of the game is. They're trying to keep this going as long as possible. Sooner or later, he's going to meet his military objective, and then there's going to be a provisional government. Maybe Viktor Yanukovych will be brought back to preside over some sort of constitutional convention. They will put in the changes into the constitution. You're saying, I don't know. Maybe that ship has sailed. But for 8 years, Putin has wanted to
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
They will put in the changes into the Constitution. You're saying, maybe that ship has sailed, but for 8 years, Putin has wanted to reincorporate Lugansk and Donetsk into Ukraine with those constitutional guarantees. And it would, frankly, be easier to maintain Ukraine as a neutral buffer state with those provinces incorporated into Ukraine, because, you know, then you've got that many more Russian voters, Russian-speaking voters, to balance out the politics. That's the way I see things moving. But, you know, there's – so the question is, will the this narrative – I mean, how is it going to play out in the West, for instance? Are people going to sour on this whole narrative? Are they going to realize that they've been played? And are they going to – or probably most importantly, I mean, people are – people may be willing to watch TV and change their Facebook profiles to put in the Ukrainian flag's colors. Are they going to be willing to pay $8 a gallon gas? Are they going to be willing to see one third of their retirement portfolios dry up, or one half? And, you know, when this happens, do they sour on it? The economic sanctions, is it just going to provide a platform for so many of our institutions, from credit card companies to the SWIFT system to everything else, manufacturers and whatnot, just to be replaced by Chinese companies? So I mean, honestly, my bet is that he's going to achieve his military objectives. There's going to be a period of, you know, anti-Russianism, but is it at the end of the day? I have the feeling that the strength of the alliance with China, with the all the economic problems it's going to cause for the West, I think if I was a betting man, I would bet that this is going to backfire on Victoria Nuland, backfire on the fake Brandon administration, and just add to the overall discontent here in the West, and that we are in for a lot more, you know, truckers and political chaos here. That's what I think. And we're starting to run out of time, but do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think you may be right, and I hope you're right anyway. So that, you know, well, I don't hope you're right about them overthrowing Putin, and I don't think that's going to happen.
I think he'll survive this, but I think that's the objective. That's new and Brandon objective.
It might be. I mean, also, I mean, I think another two of their objectives is to replace that Nord Stream pipeline with liquid natural gas coming from the United States. And secondly, the other one is to boost the, you know, the military industrial complex. And you're already seeing this with people like Germany offering 2% of their, you know, increasing their GDP to defense. So they're making a lot of money there. I just hope it stops there, because they are prolonging it for some reason. And I think
they're prolonging it to maximize casualties.
Yeah.
For everybody who dies, that is bad for Putin, and it's good for Victoria Nuland.
Yeah, but I just hope it's not that they're not doing that, so that they can drum up enough emotional support from the people to justify a war, because people are this. I've noticed an increase in this rhetoric of having a no-fly zone in Russia.
Yep.
Or in the Ukraine. And I'm sorry, but the other name for that is World War III starting.
It is. That's right. That is. And I don't know if, like, Victoria Nuland, if she really wants a no-fly zone and really wants World War III, I kind of doubt that, but we could get it. We could very easily get it. And ramping up all of this hostility towards Russia, it's going to put political pressure on political entrepreneurs like Senator Josh Hawley or whoever, I don't know, people who are going to be running for president, who are going to be trying to tap into all that hostility, and they're going to be pushing for war with Russia. And that's the way these things work.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just hope it stops short of there. But anyway, we're out of time, aren't we, Patrick?
We are.
All right. Well, it's good to talk again. It's good to get through some of this stuff. And I just only hope that some foolish moron doesn't, you know, the sort of mature and more adults in the room prevail in this, because this could get out of hand very quickly, you know?
Yeah, well, good luck with that one. Okay, and thanks, and I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Hey there, are you gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.